Ann Patchett's best-selling novel Bel Canto improbably blended the worlds of guerrilla warfare and opera in a romantic narrative that compelled critics and readers alike to give her a standing ovation. Patchett's new novel is called Run, and book critic Maureen Carrigan is leaping to her feet once more.
It's been a long time since I've teared up at the end of a novel. I think I'd have to go back to my first ever reading of Stuart Little about 7 years ago to find the last trace of tears before this week when I finished Ann Patchett's new novel, Run. Run touched me deeply, and in this Pomo age where irony is still equated with intelligence in writing and criticism, it's no small thing to come upon a work of serious literary fiction that's earnestly and daringly poignant. But I was also moved to tears for another reason. It's the easy virtuosity of Patchett's technique that's also affecting. She's just so good at everything here. The subtlety of the characters, the atmosphere of a fully realized world, the overall intricate plot design that gives a reader reassurance that an all-powerful author god is sitting comfortably in the pilot seat. Like her previous wonder of a novel, Bel Canto, Run limits itself to a contained setting and a tight little group of characters. In Bel Canto, her characters were hostages to a rebel band of guerrillas. In Run, they're hostages to the weather. When Run opens, a nighttime snowstorm is falling over Boston, one of those snows that blankets and silences a city. Bernard Doyle, a former mayor of Boston, is leaving a Jesse Jackson lecture with two of his college-age sons, Tip and Teddy. It's necessary to note, because the plot turns on this fact, that despite their Boston Irish monikers and their Celtic custom of calling their father Da, Tip and Teddy are African American. They were adopted as babies by the pale-faced Doyle and his late wife, who died many years ago of cancer. After the lecture, Tip stubbornly announces he's returning to his lab in the basement of the Natural History Museum at Harvard, where he studies his great passion, fish. Doyle tries to stop him, and in the middle of the blinding blizzard, as father and son are arguing, an SUV comes out of nowhere. It probably would have hit and killed Tip, but a woman, a black woman named Tennessee, spots the SUV bearing down and leaves her 11-year-old daughter on the snowy pavement and runs to push Tip to safety, in the process getting hit herself. So ends just the first chapter of this novel that will track the Doyles and their savior through this surreal night and the day that follows, when snow is general over Boston. That allusion to Joyce's masterpiece, The Dead, is deliberate, because Patchett plays with the eeriness of a nighttime snowstorm. She dramatizes the same sense that Joyce had, that the boundary between past and present, the living and the dead, is more permeable as snow falls out of a dark sky and shrouds everything below. Tennessee is brought to the hospital and hovers there in a limbo state. Ghosts walk, long-buried memories and emotional bonds and secrets of identity emerge all throughout these strained hours. Patchett makes coincidences that might seem too far out even for Dickens seem plausible through the glowing vitality of her language. Here, for instance, is a passage given to us by an omniscient narrator where Tip and Teddy's uncle, a dying priest named Father Sullivan, ruminates on the likelihood of an afterlife, which he started to doubt. Look at all these true believers who wanted only to live. Look at himself, clinging onto this life like a squirrel scrambling up the icy pitch of a roof. How wrong-headed it seemed now to think that the thrill of heartbeat and breath were just a stepping stone to something greater. What could be greater than the armchair, the window, the snow? Why wouldn't it stand to reason that this had been the whole of existence, and now he would retreat back to the nothingness he had come from in order to let someone else have their turn at the view? We readers are assured that Father Sullivan's 11th-hour doubts are not the workings of disbelief, but rather a joyful realization of all he had been given. And indeed, that's the miracle that's worked throughout this novel. Run takes devastating moments of loss and regret and scatters them into a sweeping Milky Way arc of dazzling affirmation, without itself somehow becoming cosmically cheap and sentimental as a work of fiction. Maybe you won't actually tear up, as I did, if you read Run, but I guarantee that even the most cynical of readers won't roll their eyes either.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. She reviewed Ann Patchett's new novel, Run. You can download podcasts of our show by going to our website, freshair.npr.org.